Radio for the Sacramento River, Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Welcome to The Wheel. I'm Rebecca Chenalu, your local voice in the international movement to bring death out of the closet. I'm very happy to have you here to join the conversation as we consider the mysteries of living, dying, loving, grieving, and honoring our dead. This show is about creating community. And so there will be opportunities for you to participate by sharing your input on our Facebook page, at The Wheel Mysteries. Go ahead and pull it up. Or if you don't have Facebook, you can send me an email at thewheelmysteries@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you. Before we get started, let's thank some of the underwriters who make this show possible. The Wheel is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Friends of the Arts, your state local partner to the California Arts Council. Since 2001, Friends of the Arts have been creating economic opportunity by producing and supporting events and spreading the word out about arts and culture through their bi-monthly newsletters. To stay in the know about arts or to have your event listed, visit friendsofthearts.org. I think that's it. And also by Pullen Cyclery, providing self-propelled transportation and non-polluting recreation. Pullen's has been serving the Chico community since 1918 at 801 Main Street in downtown Chico and can be reached by calling 342-1055. Welcome back to this episode of The Wheel. Tonight, we'll be talking with local attorney Margaret McNulty about estate planning. What is it? And have you done it? Now, you might think this doesn't pertain to you. Maybe you don't think you have an estate. Or maybe you think you have your plan all in place. Still, I am quite sure that you will gain helpful insights and food for thought in regards to your eventual, inevitable demise. To lighten the mood, we'll be playing our fun game called Who Died This Month, where we feature the music of a musician deceased during the month of January. One of my favorite parts of the show is getting to hear real-life stories from real-life people in our This American Death segment, which tonight features my old friend, Rich Meyer. And as usual, we will have an exit tip for your exit plan, some news of the movement, some music to hold it all together. We hope you'll plan to stay with us for the whole show. And as always, your comments and shared experiences are welcome at The Wheel Mysteries on Facebook. Before we dive in, let's remember some favorite musicians who died in the month of January. Scottish rocker John Martin. If you don't know John, he's one of my favorites. Pete Seeger, Peggy Lee, Etta James, David Bowie, and Hank Williams, just to name a few. What song by one of these musical now stars in our cosmos do you think I will feature at our break? See, there's our first mystery. Lots of exciting possibilities for who died this month in the middle of the show. So the mystery of what happens when we die can seem overwhelming, but dying is also universal and as natural as being born. Hearing other people's stories and sharing our own can help us make some sense of the mystery. We can learn from each other and think about what we want. The poet Mary Oliver says, "I think of every life as a flower, as common as a field daisy, and as singular." I think of every death this way too. So each show, we're going to hear an ordinary person tell their story in our segment called This American Death. Tonight, we'll hear from my friend Rich Meyer. I've known Rich since we studied in London together in the early 80s, and ours is one of those friendships that stood the test of time. I've watched over these past many years as he has selflessly and very humbly committed himself to the work of tending to his parents' affairs. And I'm very grateful that he agreed to record his story in spite of technical difficulties and the geographic distance between us. Let's hear from Rich. Give me a second here, and we'll hear from Rich.
I'm from Indianapolis, Indiana. My dad passed away a little over 2 years ago, a result of his having Parkinson's disease and a kind of sudden and dramatic decline in his health. One of the things that we weren't really ready to deal with as a family were just all of the things with my parents' estate. We had talked about some things in the abstract, but really not much to any detail. Both my parents over the last few years had become increasingly distrusting of people. A lot of the distrust was born of stories they heard at their local senior center, stories that primarily dealt with family coming in, stealing money, placing the parents in senior care facility, and then just kind of walking away from the parents. My parents had begun the process of updating their will and also trying to establish a trust. For whatever reason, they completed neither one of those tasks. The one person who probably knew the most about everything, especially medical matters, was my sister, who unfortunately passed away suddenly about a month before my dad's health started to decline rapidly. By this time, it had also become rather apparent to all of us that my mom's memory was failing, and unfortunately, by the time my dad passed away, my mom really couldn't help much with regard to locating papers, accounts, stocks, wills, life insurance policies, really anything. The bulk of that responsibility fell to me, since I was the closest physically to my parents' house, which unfortunately was out of state and about 5.5 hours away. We would go to the house regularly, we being myself and my family, just kind of going through things room by room, closet by closet, stack by stack. My dad was an engineer, was a very organized individual until maybe the last 5 years of his life. And then he just got to a point where he would kind of place things in stacks around the room and would constantly tell himself he was going to get to them, which unfortunately he never did. This then meant repeated trips to their house out of state, going through things, finding the key to the safe deposit box. Part of that, obviously, getting the power of attorney for both of my parents so that I could actually access these things, try to figure things out, try to get things somewhat organized. Even 2 years after my dad's death, I'm still finding things that I didn't know about before, things that will suddenly come to me in the mail that I had no record of. And so it's a little frustrating. It's been a very, very long, tedious process that has consumed a lot of my time away from my family, and then has consumed all of my vacations and has consumed a good portion of the vacations for my wife and children. I did try about 10 years ago to discuss these things with my parents, these things being how they wanted to handle things when they got to a point where they were no longer going to be able to handle things, all of their accounts, trips to doctors, where they were going to live, etc. Neither of my parents was particularly welcoming to that conversation, wanting to have it at any level. They did have it a little bit with me. My mom definitely was more worried about the idea that she was handing over control of her life to somebody else. It took about 3.5 years from the time that my dad had to go to a rehab facility after a hospital stay, 3 years after I moved both my parents here near me in Indianapolis, to get to a point where things were organized enough that we could actually think about trying to sell their house. That began the process of figuring out what was something we wanted to keep, what were things that we just wanted to donate, what were things we wanted to give to other family members. The beginning was really tough for me, just finding so many things to go through, to read. But at the same time, it was really kind of exciting because I got to find out so much more about the things that my parents had done while I was a child, when I was completely oblivious to all the things that they were involved in. I was certainly telling people I really don't know how they managed to be involved as much as they were in the community. And at the same time, while I was growing up, I never noticed. They always seemed to be there for me. My mom always made sure that we were wearing clean clothes, that we had food in our stomachs. And yet she belonged to so many different organizations and volunteered so much of her time, as did my dad, that I really don't recall any time when they were just missing from my life. As time went on and I was spending more and more time at their house trying to get through things, I certainly stopped looking at things and just reminiscing. It became more of a chore, just trying to get things cleaned up, sold, stored away, transported to my house in Indianapolis if I was going to keep something, or something maybe sent to my brother or my nephews. We were just trying to find a home for as many things as we could. It was sad in that there were so many things that I didn't know about growing up, or things that had been long family heirlooms that I have no history of. I don't know who they belonged to, where they came from, or anything. It was just a conversation that never occurred with my dad and either myself or my siblings. With regard to their estate, it was definitely frustrating for myself and my brother that my parents were not more trusting of either of us. It just left us so much in the dark and just meant we had to do a lot of sleuthing to try to figure out a number of things. Fortunately, my brother has a background in the investment industry as a broker, so he was able to guide me with regard to obtaining certain documents, having accounts set up a particular way so that they reflected those things we knew they wanted to do with the will that they had never updated. I have to say all of the banks that I dealt with were very, very, very helpful and really understanding, and definitely guided me and helped make that part of the process as easy as it possibly could be. The investment brokers that they were with, not quite so much, but understand that as well. They were trying to make sure that I wasn't doing one of those things that led to the rumors they would hear at their senior center. I was also fortunate to find a very helpful attorney in Indianapolis who walked me through the process of obtaining power of attorney and who was willing to pen letters to organizations and groups who were hesitant as to, with regard to accepting the power of attorney. My mother and I were both fortunate enough to be at my dad's side when he took his final breath. It was also oddly timed in that just after my dad's passing, a priest came to the door who was actually coming to just pray with my dad. He had no knowledge that my dad had passed away, so that couldn't have been better timed. Really kind of brought a lot of comfort to both myself and my mother. I certainly wish that my parents had started the process of getting things in line for their end of days much earlier than they did. I wish they had been much more open to conversation with myself and my siblings. And I wish they had finalized a lot of the things that they had started a decade ago. Had they done those things, a lot of the hoops that I had jumped through, a lot of the time that I had to spend traveling between my house and their house, a lot of that would have just been taken away. I personally feel a lot of guilt for the amount of time that I had to stay away, or I chose to stay away from my family to go and take care of things that needed to be taken care of for my dad while he was still alive and for my mom who is still alive. And the guilt I feel mostly has to do with just not being there for my children, especially for my daughter who's left 2 years of high school. We're a little rough on her. I really wish that I had maybe put things with my parents on the back burner so that I could help her more than I did. Unfortunately, just with the demands of, especially with my dad's declining health, that needed to be the priority. At least in my mind, that needed to be the priority. My parents certainly never intended to do things in such a way that it would become such a burden upon any of their children. And obviously, they never planned or suspected or expected that my sister would pass away suddenly. But all of those things combined really just kind of show that these things need to be taken care of far earlier than we ever think, because we just don't have the time that we think we are going to have. I have found it interesting that amongst my peers, a lot of my friends here in Indianapolis, that we were all going through the same things at the same time. And we have all basically pledged, all of us being in our mid-50s, we have basically pledged that whatever we are going to do, it's not going to be what our parents did to us with regard to not completing those tasks. They're going to make everything easier when our health starts to decline and as we get closer and closer to death. Happened with my parents was far more the norm than not, but I'd like to see that change. I just don't see where there's really much reason or excuse to leave things in the manner that my parents did. At the same time, that having my parents move near me and my being able to spend as much time with them as I did, especially while my dad's health declined, was certainly a gift. Got to see my dad in a whole new light. My dad was always someone who was very carefree, very easygoing, never really someone who got mad. My mom was always the person who I thought was the leader. She was the type A personality. She was the one always going out, setting things up, and driving everyone forward. As my dad's health declined, I got to see him in a new light, a light that showed me just how brave and strong he was. And something that I just really never gave him credit for prior. At no point did he ever lose composure. Did he ever curse anything? Did he ever blame God or anybody? He just knew this was life. This is what he was given. And he was thankful for every moment. So in that, I definitely feel blessed that I was allowed to get to know him at a far deeper and more personal level. And I guess in the end, I just have to, I really miss him. And that's my story.
Oh. And in the end, I really miss him. I could do a whole show just on those words. Been through so much, and in the end, there is love. I'm struck by the gifts that Rich feels he's received from this process. Even though he's also very honest about the tough choices we have to make and the toll it can take on us and on our families when we are the ones left to navigate things without a roadmap, I call those the backdoor gifts we get for stepping into the hard work like Rich has done. But he makes it very clear it would have been much better if his parents had finished the estate planning that they began. I certainly can relate to this. There's, you know, it seems like there's always something on that could be done that I myself haven't done. So to help us better understand what we need to do in order to be better prepared, we'll be hearing a lively interview with local attorney Margaret McNulty. Let's see what wisdom Margaret has to share. Today we'll be talking with local attorney Margaret McNulty about an overview of estate planning and some misconceptions many people have about it. Margaret, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do?
Okay, as you mentioned, my name's Margaret McNulty. I'm an attorney here in Chico, and my practice focuses on estate planning, both before death and after death, which is called estate administration.
All right. So let's dive in. What is estate planning, and what are some of the misconceptions that people have about it?
Well, let's start with some of the misconceptions. A big one is when people say they don't care about estate planning because they won't be around. So what do they care? But what they fail to consider is that it will matter to their loved ones and friends who are likely going through a very, very difficult time. My feeling is that anything you can do in advance to ease that burden on your family and friends will likely be very much appreciated.
Yes, yes. I mean, I think, you know, if we think dealing with these details is difficult now when we are of sound mind and in decent health, imagine how much more difficult it's going to be to figure out when someone is grieving, sometimes still working and raising a family and caught off guard by the amount of work involved in actually managing the redistribution of a lifetime of stuff. And it can really be a burden. And we've just heard from my friend Rich about that. So definitely. What are some other misconceptions that people have about estate planning?
Well, another big one is when people say they don't need estate planning because they don't have a, quote, estate. Estate planning actually addresses much more than the amount of property and assets you own and who gets what at your death.
So then what is estate planning?
Well, I like to think of estate planning as an umbrella term. It encompasses both financial and non-financial issues during your lifetime and after your death. During your lifetime, the main point of estate planning is to determine who will make decisions, manage your affairs for you. If you can't, say you get in an accident or you become incapacitated or dementia, which is a real possibility for all of us aging people.
Yes.
There's different ways of handling this depending on your situation, and it's good to educate yourself before you're seriously ill or in decline. Some of the tools that people use during their lifetime are powers of attorney. There's two main types. There's financial, who's going to pay your bills, who's going to represent your estate, quote unquote. And then the non-financial document would be, the main one is an advanced healthcare directive, which is hugely important. It's like, who's going to make those healthcare decisions for you if you can't? And finally, in some situations, there might be a conservatorship, depending. But oftentimes, the two powers of attorney, the financial and healthcare directive, will take the place of that.
Okay, so, you know, conservatorship, I hear that word, and I'm not sure I know what it means. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about what a conservatorship is, because I think I often see people at our programs who are alone, who say, I've outlived the people in my family, and I don't know who to sign up for these things. Is that what a conservatorship is?
Well, actually, conservatorship is a court-supervised process. There's two main types of conservatorships. One is conservatorship of the person, which will take care of the physical needs. They'll make healthcare decisions for them. They'll help them with their day-to-day physical activities. And the other type of conservatorship is conservatorship of the estate. Sometimes people need both. In my situation, I actually have one child, Elizabeth, and she has Down syndrome. She's an adult. So when she became 18, my husband and I, he passed away, by the way, 8 years ago. But at the time, we applied for and got what's known as a limited conservatorship. And that's used for individuals with developmental disabilities, where they retain some rights, but they give a lot of rights to the conservator. I know we're kind of getting into the weeds a little too much here.
Yeah, it's good to know. Yeah. I think that, you know, there's a lot of different situations out there. And this is one of the main points of the show, is to encourage people to educate themselves a little bit about what's going to be necessary in their situation. You talk about the different kinds of situation. There's also a lot of different types of family dynamics. I'm wondering what sorts of experiences you've had in terms of the difficulties people have determining who they want to do these things, who they want to do these roles. I mean, how do you pick these people? How do you choose who will be your agent, who will manage your estate, that sort of thing?
Or your trustee after your death. I've seen that time and time again. A couple might come in and say, gee, who should be our successor, trustee? Who should be the executor of our estate? And they think they'll be hurting a child's feelings if they pick another child. And I try to remind them it's not a badge of honor. It's not a fun thing to do, to either be an agent during lifetime or managing, you know, an estate after somebody's death. It's a lot of work and responsibility, right? So they should really look at who's the best qualified to do that. It's like if, for instance, a healthcare director, they have two children. One's has a lot of medical knowledge. The other one doesn't. They might consider the one with medical knowledge or not, depending on the person's viewpoints on things, right? So they should really look at who's best qualified. And they might have a different financial agent than healthcare agent, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And I work with people completing advanced healthcare directives, too. And I think couples often feel like it's a, you know, it's a love note. Like, I have to choose my husband or I have to choose my wife. They're my husband or my wife. But it's not a stamp of loyalty. You want to pick someone who's going to be able to navigate the medical system for you the best. And that's not necessarily your spouse. They may be a mess.
That's true. Although I have to say, from my experience, pretty much over 90% of the time, spouses generally do appoint somebody else first. By the way, agents, whether it's healthcare or financial, I tell this to my clients, just because you appoint an agent and they agree to it now doesn't mean when the need arises so many years from now, they have to do it. They can decline to act, in which case it then falls to your next alternate agent. So say your spouse gets dementia and they're not able to act on your behalf 20 years from now, then the next agent would step up, hopefully.
Mm-hmm. This is why it's also good to update your documents, what, every 10 years, every decade? For the healthcare directive, they say every decade, whenever there's decline, whenever there's a death, whenever there's a divorce.
Right, a major change, right? And for sure, if you feel like your capacity is slipping, you need to look at all your documents at that point. Or if you haven't done your documents, seriously consider getting them done.
Yes. And so we've talked a little bit about how these different roles can help support someone even before they die. Estate planning is not just about after your death, but also about if you become incapacitated before you die. But what about after your death, in terms of distribution of your property and such?
Well, after your death, the questions that you consider as you're doing your estate planning are who you want to receive your assets, family, friends, charities. And importantly, especially in the case of a situation where there's a beneficiary who wouldn't benefit from managing their own affairs, is do you want to distribute those assets outright to the person or hold it in trust and have a trustee manage the assets on behalf of your beneficiary? For instance, my daughter, right? Mm-hmm. In her situation, I have a special needs trust that will automatically be created at my death.
Describe some of the other scenarios that are common when you don't necessarily want all of your stuff dispersed at once to the next person in line, which is what will happen if you don't have documents.
Right. Oftentimes, if somebody's leaving all their assets to their children, they might have three children and one of them has a substance abuse problem. And that's the last thing they need, is to receive a huge amount of money, right, that would exacerbate their condition. Maybe you have a child that's fiscally irresponsible. They're gambling or whatever. They're always in debt, bankrupt. You know, you might want to hold back in trust those assets just to have some stream of income for the child, right?
It would be distributed as
right,
you decide.
Right, as the yeah. trustee decides mm-hmm. or however it's written in the trust.
Yes. Okay, and then I was surprised when I was reading through your stuff to be reminded about the other details that need to be considered. These other, you called them legal vehicles or tools. And it reminded me of what Rich said in his story. He was still finding paperwork for different accounts more than a year after his father's death. Hmm. What are some of the other things that people, you know, need to be thinking about when they're thinking about estate planning?
Right. As far as Rich's situation, that's not uncommon where people just don't know what's out there. The first thing, I call it searching for breadcrumbs, right? You want to see the trail of where are the assets. The first thing that I look at is the last tax return, because oftentimes you go to that schedule that lists interest and dividends and you can say, wow, there's an account there. But what that tax return doesn't show are the retirement accounts and the IRAs, because oftentimes people don't report those on their tax return because they haven't started receiving distributions, right? So those are the hardest assets to find. Also life insurance policies. So regardless if you've done your documents or not, leaving breadcrumbs, I think, is the most important thing. It's like, sit down and write a list of everything I have. I have this account, I have that account. And, oh yeah, I have this retirement account from this job 30 years ago that's still sitting out there.
Yes, yes. There's a lot of those types of things that might not be in people's minds when they say, well, I don't have an estate.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm going to break up this interview with attorney Margaret McNulty with some music. We will return to the interview to hear her answer the question, if you don't do a will or a trust or leave any kind of a plan, how is it determined who will manage the estate? I was surprised by her answer, and you might be too. So, it's also a clue for our Who Died This Month game. As I said at the top of the show, we had many beloved musicians die in the month of January. Hank Williams, John Martin, Pete Seeger, Peggy Lee, Etta James, David Bowie. Who will we hear? Well, folks, our honored musician this evening died at the young age of 29 without an estate plan, leading to a chain of events that would forever change the life of his unborn daughter and keep his multi-million dollar estate stuck in the courts for years. If you guessed Hank Williams, you would be right. Hank also happens to be one of my mom and dad's favorites, so I grew up listening to classic Hank Williams songs like this Lovesick Blues.
I got a feeling of the blues, oh Lord, since my baby said goodbye. Lord, I don't know what I'll do, all I do is sit and sigh. Oh Lord, that last long day she said goodbye. Well Lord, I thought I would cry. She'll do me, she'll do you, she's got that kind of loving. Lord, I love to hear her when she called me sweet. Daddy, such a beautiful dream. I hate to think it all over. I've lost my heart, it seems. I've grown so used to you somehow. Well, I'm nobody's sugar daddy now. And I'm lonesome. I got the lovesick blues. Well, I'm in love with a beautiful gal. That's what's the matter with me. Well, I'm in love with a beautiful gal. But she don't care about me. Thought I tried to keep her satisfied. But she just wouldn't stay. So now that she is leaving, this is all. My baby said goodbye. Lord, I don't know what I'll do.
she'll do me, she'll do you. She's got that kind of loving. Lord, I love to hear her when she calls me sweet.
Whoops, what happened there? Not quite sure. All righty, Hank. Well, I guess you're done. Okay, Hank Williams. Hank Williams was found dead in the back of his car, the result of a mixture of alcohol and drugs at age 29. Only 5 days later, his daughter was born to a woman with whom he'd had a casual affair. Now that he was gone, the child went to live with Hank's mother, who legally adopted the girl in 1954. However, when she died in 1955, the young girl was made a ward of the state of Alabama and subsequently was adopted by new parents who renamed her. The messy tale of her struggle to confirm the identity of her real daddy and 30-plus years of legal battles, including Hank Jr. taking it to the Supreme Court, is all posted at The Wheel Mysteries on Facebook. I'm going to post the link to that tale. Now, you may not be as rich as Hank, but this story does highlight the simple fact that if you have children, no matter how young you are, you need to have a basic estate plan. Let's continue listening to my interview with attorney Margaret McNulty, who will tell us more about how estates are settled when there is no plan, and also some really practical advice about how you can move forward in getting your affairs in order.
If you don't do a will or a trust and you don't make any plan, how is it determined who will manage the estate?
Well, it depends if it's a mandatory probate estate or not, right? A probate estate is triggered when there's assets, I call it just sitting out there in the field, assets that aren't designated. This isn't talking about say accounts that have designated beneficiaries. They're their own vehicle, right? So they follow the terms of the contract that the person set up. But if the assets in the estate owned by the individual, it used to be $150,000. If they exceeded $150,000, then a full formal probate was triggered. They just recently upped that amount, and I don't know why they chose this. They said $166,250.
Oh, just to keep it simple, to remember.
Like, oh,
yeah,
please. Right. So, but anyhow, what you look at is the gross fair market value of assets. So the first thing I ask clients is, do you own your house? And pretty much anybody that owns a house in California, that puts them over that amount. And they might say, well, my house is worth $350,000, but I owe $300 on it. So that's only $50. It's like, no, it doesn't work that way. They look at the gross fair market value for probate valuations, right? So if your fair market value is $350, that's the amount for probate, and the probate's triggered off the bat, right? If you don't own a house and you have assets, accounts, and so forth, if they all have named living designated beneficiaries at the time of your death, then that is a vehicle in itself, and that would not go through probate.
But say you had stuff, a house, and some assets that you, and you did not write anything up. How does the court determine who takes care of it if you've written nothing down?
Okay, right. Anybody can petition the court to probate an estate. The court will generally choose the person closest to it that makes sense, right? So for instance, if there was a spouse who died and the other spouse is capable, sound mind, et cetera, et cetera, oftentimes they will allow that spouse to be the executor, the personal representative of the estate.
And I think that if there are relationships that aren't formalized by law, it can get confusing.
It definitely can, because like I said, anybody can petition. I've seen cases where a bill collector will petition to be the personal representative of the estate because want their debt paid, right?
Right.
And they see the estate has assets and nobody's doing anything. So,
wow.
Right. And I've seen situations of ex-wives too.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Yeah. People often feel that estate planning is something they can put off till they're retired. And yet, you and I know that often the most heart-wrenching and messy scenarios happen when someone dies unexpectedly at a young age. What are some of the reasons that younger people should consider estate planning?
Well, a younger person with children, right off the bat, you want to know who's going to be their guardian for your child, right? Mm-hmm. By the way, when you nominate a guardian, it's just that. You nominate the guardian, and then the court reviews it and decides. You can nominate a guardian, and just like your agent or healthcare agent, it doesn't mean they have to do it, but if they're willing and able to do it and the court appoints them, then that's peace of mind for the person, right? Healthcare directives, another thing. You can have an accident at any age.
Yeah, in fact, many of the laws in our country are based upon situations where people were younger and incapacitated, and there was unclarity about how to go forward.
Like
Terry Schiavo.
Right, the Terry Schiavo case, we all know, right? Yeah, what was that, 15 years she was hooked up?
Yeah.
That was, just so unnecessary, right?
Yeah. All right, so let's get to the nitty-gritty. What documents are involved in an estate plan? You've talked a little bit about the $166,250 amount of assets that will, determine whether or not it goes to probate. But what are the actual, what's the package that you get when you do this sort of planning?
Okay, well, let's start with a typical husband-wife client or two spouses that own real property. And in that situation, the typical documents are a trust, which will take the assets out of the field, triggering the probate. So that avoids a probate. A trust, a will for each person, financial power of attorney, healthcare directive. And then once you create a trust, the important thing is to fund the trust. Because a trust, you're really creating a box. So you need to put the assets that should go in the trust. So you do that by a grant deed, transferring title from your house, from you as individuals, into the trust, and a general assignment of assets that should go into the trust.
And for clients who don't have assets totaling,
a
single person renting their place, don't have a lot of assets, but, have some stuff.
Right.
What do they do?
Right. So they can use different tools for their accounts. They can use pay on death beneficiaries, even whether you have a house or not, you could do this, obviously. Beneficiary designations for various accounts. They should have a will also. A will is like a safety net. But two important documents for anybody, no matter how much or how little they have, are that power of attorney financial and the advanced healthcare directive.
Yeah. I think we all know stories of families where things have gone really bitter. And I think it's particularly true when there's not that many assets or when there are children who are desperately struggling and they feel like they're owed a certain amount and their brothers and sisters, feel so too. And there become these horrible scenarios. I've seen them. I know many people in our audience have probably seen them. And so even if you don't feel like you have a lot, being able to have it clear who's going to be the power of attorney and to have conversations
exactly
with people in advance and to have these things done can make not only for peace of mind for you, but peace for the whole family after you're gone.
Exactly. Less conflict. I mean, they're dealing with enough as it is at your death. So
yeah.
Right.
And now the question everyone's been waiting for, how much does it cost to do this kind of work?
I haven't really done a survey of other attorneys in town, but just from the little bit I've heard, I would say the range here in Chico is probably for the whole package of documents. We're talking the trust and all of the documents I mentioned, probably $1,500 to $3,000, $3,000 being the upper end.
Yeah, that sounds pretty average to what I've heard too. If people feel they don't have the money to pay, do attorneys do payment plans? Are there free legal services? Are there forms that people can fill out on their own?
I don't know of a lot of payment plans. I suppose some attorneys do them. Mm-hmm. Usually, personally, I bill in increments, this mm-hmm. much now, this much later. As far as people who don't need the full package of documents, they just need a simple will, power of attorney, and healthcare directive. There is Legal Services of Northern California. I actually volunteered there this past year, and they offer that service for seniors, seniors being 60 and over, and people under 60 if they income qualify for services there.
Excellent. And thanks for volunteering for the community, Margaret. That's wonderful.
Oh, sure.
So we're all convinced. We've heard Rich's story. We've heard all of our reasons why we should have these. Why do you think that in spite of all the arrows pointing towards the benefits of having this done, people don't get it done?
Well, I would say the number one reason is fear and discomfort. Even thinking about the subject matter, which is death and dying and incapacity, none of us likes to think of it. It's like, you know, should I think about that or should I think about planning my next vacation?
Yeah. You know, or go watch a Netflix show. Yeah.
it's an uncomfortable subject, but it's like Ben Franklin came up with the line, you know, nothing is certain in life, something like that, except taxes and death. Mm-hmm. And pretty much all of us would much rather do our tax return, as much as we hate that, than to think about death and incapacity and those kind of issues. But it's going to happen regardless. So once it's in the rearview mirror, the documents and the planning, then you can go back to thinking about your vacation.
Right, right. And pat yourself on the back. It could be your reward.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think that sometimes there's disagreement between a husband and wife, or spouses, I should say, more generally, couples, you know, trying to figure out how to go forward.
Really. And what I've run into that the most conflict is when it's a blended family. I've had people just jump ship mid-planning because it just brought up too much disagreement. My kids, your kids, that kind of thing. But regardless, it's a tough issue, but you need to deal with it, right?
Well, it's going to be even tougher if it happens after you die.
Because, definitely.
Yeah, so you want to deal with it when you are in sound mind and able to drink a coffee or a cocktail to help soothe the process.
Exactly. And get back to vacation planning.
Oh, yeah. So in closing, let's just remind people why it's worth it. It's to avoid probate. So, you know, if you have enough money to go into the trust, you're going to avoid probate. Now, a lot of people, I think that they do all this to avoid estate taxes. And so if they don't have much stuff, why bother? But that's sort of not an issue anymore, right?
No. You can die with now over $11 million and not pay a cent in estate taxes.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, that may go down, you know, as the presidents change over the years ahead. But, you know, it's definitely millions of dollars in your estate. So estate taxes are pretty much not the reason people do it. The main reason people do trusts are to avoid probate. Probate can be costly because of the statutory fees involved for both the attorney and the executor, the personal representative of the estate. I ballparked once just a gross, once again, we're talking about gross, estate of $400,000, even if there's debts of $350,000, they base it on the gross estate. And those fees can range about $11,000 plus costs, and then another $11,000 for the executor. So you're talking a huge amount of money and expense and time. All that being said, in rare situations, people do choose a probate. And in those situations, it's if they know that it's going to be litigious, that people are going to be fighting no matter what, sometimes they'll let it go through a probate so the court can review it and just make a ruling on it and settle it. So, but that's pretty rare.
It's very complicated. It's funny that something so important, you know, and so complex is something that so few of us think about or deal with. We spend more time shopping than dealing with what will happen to our stuff.
And I think that's another reason why people put it off. It makes their brains hurt thinking about it. There's so many pieces of the puzzle, right? And I see that when I send out a questionnaire to clients, like, okay, fill out this questionnaire before you come in. It's going to make it a lot more efficient, our first meeting, right? And they come in and they're just like, oh, no, it was 4 pages and it was hard and this and that. And I'm like, okay, let's approach it like you're getting a haircut. What does the hairdresser do? She, if you have long hair, right? She moves all the hair except a little piece. She works on a little, or he, little piece at a time. And before you know it, it's done. But if you look at the whole mess of hair at once, it just, it becomes too much and people walk away from it.
Yeah. Well, Margaret, thank you so much. Having a professional to help explain things, having a professional to help walk you through it, make sure you've got everything included. That's why we come to people like you. So thanks for being on my show.
Oh, thank you for having me.
All right. What a great interview with Margaret. You know, I want to thank our underwriters. The Wheel is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the Downtown Chico Business Association, supporting Downtown Chico for over 40 years. The DCBA brings you the Thursday night markets, the Friday night concert series, A Taste of Chico, the Christmas preview and tree lighting, Treat Street, and more. For a full schedule of what's happening downtown, visit downtownchico.com. Help keep Chico vibrant by shopping local and coming downtown. And by Satava Art Glass Studio, creating internationally acclaimed art glass since 1977. You can experience the magic of Satava Art Glass by visiting their gallery in Chico at 819 Wall Street, Tuesday through Saturday, from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., and at Satava.com. So before we finish up tonight, I want to leave you with a tip for your exit plan. In my mind, the exit plan is all those little things that you do to prepare for your death. In past shows, I suggested that you create a folder where you can save any important documents or just random thoughts related to your final exit. And if you've not already done this, I suggest you start tonight. Grab a folder, open a document on your computer, and give it a name that works for you. My parents and grandparents call it the just-in-case file. You can call it your exit plan or your when-I-die file. What matters is that you have one. And that you tell a trusted family member or friend where you put it. You don't need to tell this friend or family member about your personal affairs, but someone should know where you keep your papers in case of an emergency. And if you don't have a relative or friend you trust, you can ask a lawyer to help. So, tonight's tip is to go online or to the public library or to Passages, our local senior resource center, and get a list of all the important personal info and important papers that should be gathered into such a file. As we heard from Rich's story, one of the hardest parts of sorting out someone's estate is figuring out what various accounts and assets need to be distributed. And as Margaret explained, even if you're going to pay a professional to help with your estate planning, they will need you to provide them with the details of your assets. So whether you put one thing on your list a day, one thing a week, that will determine whether you'll be done in a couple of weeks or a couple of months. Begin. Just begin. You know, I want to say in the many programs I've facilitated to try to get people to get their affairs in order, I often hear stories from people who say that they are ready to have these conversations and do this work, but someone else in the family is dragging their feet. My parents don't want to discuss it. My spouse refuses to talk about it. Well, the American Bar Association has a great toolkit. It's actually a toolkit for completing advanced health care directives, but it can work for estate planning too. And tool number 6 is called Conversation Scripts, Overcoming the Resistance. And I've posted the link at The Wheel Mysteries on Facebook, but you can also Google it, and it's great. And one of their suggestions is that you use someone else's story to break the ice and start the conversation. Maybe something like this. I was listening to this great show on KZFR, and I heard this guy tell his story about dealing with his parents' estate, and it got me thinking about us, ... Then just dive in. Or have them listen to this show, and then ask them what they think. The show will be on the KZFR.org archive under the wheel on programs on Thursday nights for about 2 weeks. And I usually also post a recording of the show at my Facebook page. Another great tip in the American Bar Association toolkit is blame it on your lawyer. Tell them your lawyer's making you do this. Whatever it takes, I'm your cheerleader, your hand holder, and your butt kicker to get this done. All right. You know, this has been kind of a, people might think estate planning is dry. I think it's kind of fascinating and lively talking to Margaret, but I'm going to close in a little bit more poetic vein with a poem and then with another song. The poem is called Begin. Begin again to the summoning birds, to the sight of the light at the window. Begin to the roar of morning traffic all along Pembroke Road. Every beginning is a promise, born in light and dying in dark determination and exaltation of springtime flowering the way to work. Begin to the pageant of queuing girls, the arrogant loneliness of swans in the canal, bridges linking the past and future, old friends passing through with a still. Begin to the loneliness that cannot end, since it perhaps is what makes us begin. Begin to wonder at unknown faces, at crying birds in the sudden rain, at branches stark in the willing sunlight, at seagulls foraging for bread, at couples sharing a sunny secret alone together while making good. Though we live in a world that dreams of ending, that always seems about to give in, something that will not acknowledge conclusion insists that we forever begin. And that's from The Essential, Brendan Kennelly. So my next episode of The Wheel will be on April 30th, the fifth Thursday in April, so mark your calendar. Once again, we'll have the opportunity to consider the mysteries of living, dying, loving, grieving, and honoring our dead. In the meantime, I encourage you to share your stories, express your wishes, write them down, and remember, friends, talking about death won't kill you.
I filled with sin, I wouldn't let my dear Savior in. Then Jesus came like a stranger in the night. Praise the Lord, I saw the light. I saw the light, I saw the light. No more darkness, no more night. Now I'm so happy, no sorrow inside. Praise the Lord, I saw the light. Just like a blind man, I wandered along. Worries and fears I claimed for my own. Then like the blind man, God gave back his sight. Praise the Lord, I saw the light. I saw the light, I saw the light. No more darkness, no more night. Now I'm so happy, no sorrow inside. Praise the Lord, I saw the light.
wonder and stray frustrated.